The pitch is swung and lined into right field, sinking down, caught, and the game is over. The Red Sox lose to the Twins 6-5, and they are swept by Minnesota at Fenway Park.
Rich and Ken with Ted.
Can you pick who picked this one?
I know.
Shove it!
Sorry, this is the instrumental version. It is WEEI, Rich Schertenlieb, Ken Laird, three-time Super Bowl champion Teddy J, Mr. Ted Johnson, and to my right, somebody who is a Tier 1 reporter.
That's right.
But only with the Celtics. I don't think the Red Sox had not greenlit you for Tier 1 access.
They don't have the different tiers, so you just have like the club. I do have the clubhouse access.
You don't know about it, that's all.
Maybe that's it. I haven't inquired that far yet.
Mm-hmm. We call him Tier 1 Turpin, Justin Turpin, who you did a shift yesterday, right?
I did, yeah, and Sunday.
A lot of Red Sox?
A lot of Red Sox.
A lot of angry people?
That's right, yeah. There's not much to cheer about right now.
No, there is not. And I'm glad that you cover both teams because I want to talk to you a little bit about each because what a ass-kicking this past weekend. Not only did they absolutely just get swept in embarrassing fashion, but now what was the stat? It's like 7 of the 8 best teams are like on the dock.
You want to take that a step further?
Sure.
4 of the next 5 series they play feature teams that are in the top 5 in total wins this season.
Okay.
So the Braves are number 1. You see them starting tonight. Then you get Cleveland, who's 4th most wins in baseball. Then you mix in the Orioles, but that's at Fenway, and no game at Fenway Park is a guarantee. They're 8-17 there, whatever, is the only team that hasn't had double-digit wins at home. And then you get the Yankees, who are 5th most in baseball, and the Rays, who are 3rd most. So this is a defining stretch here.
Okay, so this is a bad spot that they're in.
To say the least.
And it's only going to get worse, it seems like, unless they make some sort of move. We were talking about this earlier, and I think Ted was the one who brought up the question. It was like, if they were to bring in one bat, if they were to somehow make a move and bring in one reliable dong maker, do you think that would make all the difference? If it was just one bat in there, because God knows they leave enough people on base, they just need somebody to clear those bases. As a matter of fact, what was the deal that if they were just .500 at Fenway, they'd be in 4th place in the American League? So could one bat turn this team around?
No. Go back and look at the lineup tonight and tell me one bat fixed them. You have Yoshida DHing. You have Mickey Gasper catching. You have Nick Sogard at second. Like, one bat does not fix this. Marcelo Meyer's not hitting. Isaiah Kiner-Falefa's in there. Like, one bat does not go as far as fixing this lineup. I mean, it goes a long way. I think just having one guy at the top of the lineup. Last year you saw with Bregman, it takes the pressure off guys like Anthony and those guys. But one bat is not fixing
this
mess.
Well, it's not just one bat. It's Roman Anthony and said bat. And Roman just took 12 to 15 swings today per reports, so feeling good, no setbacks.
Whee!
Dry swings. Did not hit a ball.
What's a dry swing?
Just a raw dog.
Swinging without hitting a ball or anything, just swings.
Just swings.
12 to 15 dry swings. That's does that get you pumped, huh?
Like, have you ever seen the douche in the office that does the fake golf swing?
Yep.
That's kind of what it was
right here. Actually.
It's baseball.
Yep.
It's like, you know,
it's like Tristan Casas swings in his mind.
That's it. Right. He's gonna increase that up to 20 dry swings tomorrow.
I'm not sure dry swings are really moving the needle.
But hey, they're like trying to light a fire under him, and here he goes. He was forced to go out and take some dry swings. The Red Sox plan is working.
Oh. Pressuring him.
Sounds fantastic.
Is there video of this?
I'm sure they
want it out there.
Oh, sure.
You're
I would
skeptic.
Like to see it.
I haven't. What are you saying? Is this fake?
No, I'm not sure. I'm not saying it's fake. I mean, I would hope he could take dry swings.
Are you worried that there's like a strange disconnect between what the team is saying about him and possibly what actually is going on and what Roman Anthony wants people to know?
I guess their first mistake was just saying that he'd be back in like the IL time. No one's ever on time with these things. Like,
yeah.
If it says 15 days, it's never actually 15 days. I think Sonny Gray was the only one like in recent history that I can remember that actually was on time. Like, why would you say he was going to be on time? Just like no timeline for return.
Because there you go. They're like the Celtics. I think they're always optimistic and they just sell you a line of bull.
Well,
and
The NBA is a lot of them are actually just like load management things. Like when they listed Jaylen Brown as like right Achilles tendonitis, we were like, can we pick any other body part to list him out as an injury? designation.
That's true. What I worry about, and I'm curious if you think the same thing, Terp, is when Roman comes back, how do you think that impacts Jaren Duran?
I think those two are kind of separate here. You'd move down the lineup, I'd imagine.
Do you take Jaren Durant? The reason Jaren Durant's playing as well as he is because he's an everyday player with Roman Anthony out. Roman comes back and he's got to go on the bench.
Yeah, Tracy has shown a willingness to move on from guys that are not underperforming in the lineup. That's why Mickey Gasper's been in there. That's why Nick Sogard's been in there. So, yeah, I mean, if Roman's healthy and there's a space available that you can get Durant out of there, I mean, there's nothing that he's proven other than, like, last week, and then he struggled again in the Twin Series, that he should be out there. So, yeah, that would make total sense, and I think that'd be a fair move by Tracy.
Who are we going to say goodbye to when they make the trade? Like, Aroldis Chapman's name has been thrown out there a decent amount. Who else is trade bait?
I mean, if you get to a selling point, like Sonny Gray's an obvious one, mm-hmm. who got a decent contract. I think it's up after next year, and teams are always going to be looking for some sort of pitching. Chapman's obviously an obvious one. And what about Jaren Durant? Like, is there still some interest there? There was a ton of interest with them last year. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there is this year, looking at his numbers and looking how he's performed this year. It's kind of hard to get behind that, but I think there are players on this team that you can sell off if you get to that. And the way we're talking right now, they're 8 games under .500, which has been their low point numerous different times this year.
Yeah.
And now you got this gauntlet coming up. Like, you could really be having this conversation sooner rather than later.
I can't tell, because it's I don't know if this team's not very good, but is there any indication that you can see so far on how good of a job or bad of a job Chad Tracy is doing at manager?
I mean, his in-game adjustments and whatnot, his lineup decisions, all of that seems to be trending in the right direction. It's just, what do you want him to do? The lineup's just not good.
Right.
I don't like his bullpen management. I shouldn't say it across the board, but he's had a couple decisions that have irked me. The Whitlock coming in the sixth over the weekend I thought was odd. He's put Slayton in some weird spot. He has done some weird things with guys at the back end of the bullpen mm-hmm. that I don't think they're used to, and it has not worked out.
Yeah, I kind of like when they just have the Whitlock, Slayton, Chapman. Just go with those three. Mm-hmm. Just keep okay. those three in a line there. It works. It's true. It's true and true. It works.
Except for Friday,
yeah. Which is, that's the frustrating part of this series, this weekend series. It's like, you finally score runs,
yeah.
and then the bullpen, it has an implosion two of the three games, and you end up losing.
Yeah.
So is there anything you can take from that? My God, Alex Speer, like, seemed to just be covering himself in peanut butter. He was talking, you know, at least they hit two home runs, which is, like, the first time they've done that all season, other than blah, blah, blah. I guess they're one of the only two teams left in the league that's not hit more than two home runs in a game. Is that right?
I think they've hit two or more home runs, I think, nine times.
Oh, maybe you meant at home.
At
I think
home.
You meant at Fenway.
Yeah. that would track. Yeah, yeah. A lot of times they've done it was on the road. And the
right.
most prominent one was obviously, like, the blowout in Baltimore.
Yes.
That Cora's last game.
Yep. So is there any kind of indication that is a positive? I can't get anything good out of these, like what I saw this weekend. Friday was exciting. Friday was actually an exciting game. But, you know, when you take a look at the schedule coming up, I just don't have a lot of hope that they're going to be in. It's so weird because they're three games out of a wild card. It's
right.
like, so everything is so wrong. And it makes me think that they're going to sit on their hands and not do something drastic because the AL sucks so bad.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing about that is you just don't see many trades before June. And by the time that they could be getting to the point where teams are more willing to trade, it might be too late for them, where they're flipping around and it's like, okay, we're no longer in the position to buy. Now we're going to start selling. Like, the timing of all of this is just tough for them because, again, you're not really going to see many trades. Like, teams aren't going to want to be trading this far away from the trade deadline when it's not even June yet. So yeah.
Well,
the Red Sox might want to do it, but you need two to tango.
And you wonder if ownership trusts Breslow to make these decisions.
There you go.
If they eventually decide we're going to reboot and, you know, trade Brad Marchand, basically, like the Bruins did, do you want Breslow being the
nope.
guy, or do you overhaul the whole thing again? You've already taken half measures. Now you just bring a whole new crew in and be, you know, tell the fan base we're going in a new direction again.
Yeah, I would not want him doing my trade deadline deal. Nope, because he's not very good at trade deadline deals anyway. And
he's never sold, though. He's been buying the last 2 years. This would be new for him.
So are they leaving him to hang then?
Because
that's what it sounds like.
Yeah. This is the team he wanted. He fired the manager. He's got all his people in place. He's kind of, I don't know, basically isolated himself in there. So this is, you know, this is all on him. So I kind of would want to just see how it goes. Miracle they make the playoffs and he's able to pull it out, then there you go. But I just think, let him kind of die on this hill.
What exactly are you buying for, though? Like, what are you trying to buy for? Like, this team is so far away from being a World Series contender, though. Like, what, do you want to buy and make the wild card?
Well, they have said repeatedly, including last week, Sam Kennedy said their goal is to make the playoffs. So that was 3 days ago. It's one sweep.
I mean, if you get guys with control, then yeah. But if you're just getting rentals to try to make a wild card berth, like, that's just going to set you back further, don't you think?
Well, don't you have to try, though? Like, that's the thing, is that I understand what you're saying, because if it seems hopeless, why would you invest? But you got to try. I mean, you can't just, like, sit here and say, we suck, let's continue to suck.
No, but you start to rip off the Band-Aid.
There are 110 games left. I mean, this season is so long.
This is a tough conversation to be having right before June. Like, there's 110 games, but there's no reason to believe that this is turning around. Like, even the home runs, like, over the weekend. Like, Yoshida, you're going to, like, what, is he magically just starting 20? It was his first of the year.
Tough to get excited about that. Every bit of success offensively seems like an anomaly. Like, whoa, that came out of nowhere. I mean, Jaren Duran at least had three great games in a row, right? Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, we're kind of back to where we were.
That was it. I mean, every time they take a step forward, it's not even two step backs. It's like three or four. Like, you feel great coming out of Kansas City. You come home, and that Twins team is not good. Mm-mm. Like, that's not a team you should be getting swept by.
Well, they're a wild card team now. You made them.
Yeah, they are. They are a wild card team. Yeah, Herb, that's more reflective of the American League.
What do you think of the American League? Horrible. The two teams that are projected to win their divisions, the Seattle Mariners. Who's the other team?
Probably Cleveland.
Maybe Cleveland. They're projected to win 83 games and still win their division, which is the same. But Marcel Meyer, what do you think his ceiling is?
I mean, he's got to start hitting the ball. I mean, last year he struck out a ton. This year he's just not really hitting the ball. So, I mean, at least he's been healthy. That's a start. But maybe a move to shortstop kind of does open things up for him. Just like being back in that routine, that's his natural position. Maybe that does help him out a little bit. But he needs to start hitting the ball because he's a big problem with the offense as well.
Yeah. As I was saying, all they need is one reliable dong maker. That's
more than, they really need more.
I like Bradford's idea of Yordan Alvarez. That would be fun.
There's no chance they can do that, right?
I mean, I don't see it. I just like, who on this team are they going to want? Like, you got prospects that you can trade, but like even then, there's not a ton there.
Yeah, young pitching, and they'd have to give up several pieces of it, you know, and are they willing to do that?
But the team was built on pitching and defense. Mm-hmm. Why would you do that?
No, you need a big bat.
Yeah, well, all I know is that I just don't want this team to suck for the summer. It's honestly, it's the one time I work at a station where I can get tickets. And I kind of don't want the little perk to suck.
They could be, if they're 8 games back and they're 8 games under 500 and they're still in the wild card race, like, we could be talking ourselves into this in late July.
Rich will be the only one there in the front row. Yeah,
like, sure. Somehow I got tickets to this game. All right, well, Terp, I'm glad you're here because, as I said, you are a tier one reporter when it comes not just to the Red Sox, which you're in the clubhouse. I'm sorry, tier one with the Celtics. There is a decent report that came out from Mark Stein, who is pretty connected.
Yeah,
and he's talking about the legitimacy of Jaylen Brown being shopped around, and there is one team where the more I think about it, and when I say the more, I'm saying since about 2 o'clock this afternoon, the more I've been talking with these guys. I kind of like there's a deal that could be coming out of Houston for Jaylen Brown, and I want you to tell me whether or not this is something that you, A, believe could happen, B, whether it's a good deal, and C, what else is out there that could be better than that, okay?
Let's do it.
All right, we'll get to it when we come back. All right, it is 93.7 WEEI. Rich, Ken, Ted Johnson, we got Stiz Jackson, of course, our man Terp here in studio, and I'm just going to mention this, and we're not even going to play it. But, you know, the whole Stephen A. Smith, Nick Wright calling Stephen A. Smith like a wannabe mobster, saying, you know, what are you, threatening people? And then, of course, Stephen A. Smith kind of does the same thing back to Nick Wright. Like, I know the people you run with. Don't make me say what I know about you and your gang. And then
Jaylen Brown, be careful what you wish for.
What was that all about?
It was just him just trying. Just say what you know. Say it. What are we doing here? And then I'm not going to play it right now because it's really becoming ridiculous. But Nick Wright just, like, told Stephen A. Smith that he needed to apologize. What was it, Stiz? He needed to apologize.
Can I give you the Cliff Notes real quick?
Sure.
I promise. Less than 5 seconds.
Okay, let's hear it. Let's hear it.
I do not know better, and I am not ashamed of myself.
There you go.
Okay. So he's saying that Stephen A. Smith needs to apologize or correct himself or some kind of garbage.
You know, that's the thing, though. This is exactly what they want.
Oh, yeah.
Just us talking about it.
Oh, yeah.
That's what it's all about.
It's like, you know what it is? It's two guys. It's, you know what it is? It's two guys in a room with a cracker. That's what it is. Pants off and a cracker. They're all just having the time of their lives. Talk about me. No, talk about me. Oh, yes, talk about me. There goes the cracker.
Like, after the Jalen responded on the Twitch, he got like a 9-minute segment out of that.
Yeah. Oh,
Stephen A. just monologuing, looking dead at the camera, making like empty threats to Jalen.
Well,
like, that's exactly what he wants.
Stephen A. lives in like a booth with green screen behind it and never leaves. He just talks, and somehow it's on 18 different YouTube shows.
He's supposed to be doing journalism.
Stephen A., Stephen B., Stephen C., and now we're going to talk at MIT and bore everyone with my fantastic just backtracking when I finally get face-to-face with Stephen A. Smith like he did that one time. You know, you are you're taking the world by storm with your podcast. I thought you were angry. All right. So let's talk about Jaylen Brown in a basketball way and not in a like tattletale telephone type deal. So there was a story that came out from Mark Stein. And Mark Stein is a very good reporter. He seems to kind of have a decent idea.
He had the
about
Porzingis thing last year.
Oh,
when Porzingis
was Mark Stein?
Yeah, that was him.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah, give him all the credit in the world then. But he's very connected. And he said right now there's two teams that are believed to be in on Giannis, the Celtics won, and then the Heat. But the Jaylen Brown stuff I found to be the most interesting.
But real quick on that,
yeah.
The way he phrased it was, those are the teams that most intrigue Giannis, not necessarily that they're in on. So in other words, Giannis is intrigued by Miami and Boston.
Okay.
That's where he wants to go,
okay,
according
to
Stein.
That's kind of important, I guess.
Yeah.
He's been vocal about wanting to stay on the East Coast so he can get to Greece when he needs to. Like, in case of emergencies or whatnot.
Used to fly Spirit, but that's out now.
That's out, yeah, that's no longer.
Can't do that anymore. And then Jaylen Brown, according to Mark Stein, right now there is interest from the Houston Rockets, one team that is closely monitoring the situation here with Boston. And when it comes to what they're willing to offer, what are you hearing?
I mean, honestly, not much. This is all just kind of from the outside. Like, the Celtics keep everything really kind of close to the vest here with what they want to do. And Jaylen Brown mentioned on his stream that he was going to meet with the front office this week, but that's kind of standard practice for everything. So, I mean, if there is to be a Giannis trade, it's not going to be a two-team deal. This will be a three-team deal. And that's why there is some merit to this, and there is some intrigue around this that, you know, you look at teams like Houston, like Jaylen Brown obviously has a good relationship with Ime Udoka. That's a team that's had a lot of success. Didn't this year, but Kevin Durant really wasn't available. And we'll see what they do with Kevin Durant, because that whole thing was kind of a disaster last year for him. I know he was all NBA, but right around the All-Star break, he got exposed to having like a burner, calling out players and all of that, and he wasn't available for the postseason. So if there is to be a trade that lands Giannis in Boston, it's going to be a three-team deal. And you look at teams like Portland, look at teams like Houston. Atlanta obviously makes a ton of sense with Jaylen being from Atlanta. But I kind of wonder about Portland, because their owner is doing everything he can possibly do to cut costs. Does he really want to bring in like a $60 million player? Like,
yeah.
I'd be interested to see that whole thing.
So I'm sorry. So am I mistaken? What you're saying is that this deal that involves Houston would send Alperen Sengun, is it Alperen?
Alperen Sengun.
Yeah, Sengun. It would send him to up to the Bucks, and then Giannis would be here. It's not Sengun coming to Boston for...
Stein didn't have any players in there, so a lot of that's just kind of people online getting in the trade machine and trying to kind of figure out their own kind of alternatives, but he didn't report any kind of players or any draft capital going back and forth. So all that's speculation.
But as far as him monitoring it, it seemed to me that he was speculating that there could just be a direct trade, not a three-team trade with Houston involving Jaylen Brown, correct?
To me, I mean, yeah.
The way that I read it,
it was kind of
like,
open-ended, the report there. But, I mean, possibly, but like I'd imagine that would be in a trade to facilitate Giannis, because I don't think there's anyone really on Houston that the Celtics look at and say, this player is worth giving up Jaylen Brown, who just had a top six season in the NBA.
If you're getting rid of Jaylen, what profile of player would you want the Celtics to get in return?
A guy like Giannis. But I really do have a lot of...
Gets to the rim.
That's the big thing. And Jaylen does that. Like, he led the league in drives last year. Like, so Jaylen isn't necessarily one of those guys. Top 10 in free throw attempts, and that's a correlation with him getting downhill.
Yep.
It's just looking at what him and Tatum have been able to accomplish as a duo, right? 5 conference finals, 2 NBA finals, 6 50-win seasons. Like, they have the most wins since coming into the NBA together, since becoming a duo, rather. Most conference finals appearances, tied for the second most NBA finals appearances. Like, it works with these two. Mm. It's about complementing the players around them. And, you know, there are definitely pros and cons with Giannis. Like, prior to last year, he's finished top four in MVP voting seven straight years. Like, when he's healthy, he's one of the best players in the world. But you worry about his durability. And since they won the title in Milwaukee, his teams have very badly fallen off. So you kind of worry about that as well. So there are pros and cons to it, and I can kind of see both sides.
What'd you think of Miles Turner calling him out for being the last one on the plane when they would leave? He was started off talking about Doc Rivers and then kind of started
how
ripping
Doc
on
Doc wouldn't find anybody, and like Giannis would just show up when he wanted.
Yeah.
And if he wasn't there, like the plane would just wait. Like, I wouldn't want a player like that if I were the Celtics.
See, that's exactly like, what we were talking
that's
about.
That's how I look at
there's
it.
There's too many red flags.
You're not going to get away with that stuff here with the Celtics. Like, you might get away with that with Milwaukee, where you're like arguably the best player they've ever had in franchise history. Like, of course they're going to do everything they can to accommodate you, but the Celtics aren't going to do that. Like, if you're told the plane leaves at 2:05, you're there 1:35, to like well before then. We're not waiting the plane on the runway for Giannis to show up at his leisure. Like, that's ridiculous.
Here, the problem here, you can hear it in Terp's voice. He and Scal have gotten together in Forsberg, and they are all team slingshot. They all want to run it back, cut payroll, and slingshot it in 2 years. This is like the tier one philosophy. I don't understand why.
Give me the wet dream of the slingshot crew. Like, what are they saying the best case scenario is? Walk me through it.
I'm not necessarily team slingshot.
I know you might know, but walk me through what they're all talking about, like what they're imagining happening with this slingshot.
It would look similar to the 2023 offseason when they got Jrue Holiday and Kristaps Porzingis. Like, big splashes like that.
Okay.
Now, I don't know what players they have in mind there, because I think there are changes that can be made to this team that can make you a contender this year. Like, you have avenues to do that. Like, they're not that far off. I really don't think they are. When you look at the Eastern Conference, like, they had no business losing to Philadelphia. Absolutely no business.
It's true.
But if you get a supporting cast, a stronger supporting cast, and I think you can do that while also staying under the tax, because staying under the tax, you reset the repeater penalties, and then you can do them. You can be in there for the next 5 years, right? But the most common way to duck the tax is doing it in consecutive years. Like, any team that's really ever done it in recent history have just done it in two consecutive years, because it makes no sense to duck the tax, then go back in, and then duck it again to duck the repeaters. It just doesn't make sense. So mostly you do it all back-to-back years, and I think that's what they're going to end up doing. I think it makes the most sense and sets them up for the financial future, where you can really invest in this team. Now, if we get to the year after and we're trading guys away for tax reasoning and whatnot, then you can be like, okay, you probably shouldn't be owning the Boston Celtics if you're going to be doing that. But for now, you can see the path and you can see the vision as to why they're doing it.
Terp, I was saying earlier that as a Celtics fan, you should be rooting for the Knicks to win the whole thing, and that is because it's got to be embarrassing if you are the Celtics front office to take a look and go, all right, if we're going to have to compete with that team for the near future, we better sink some assets into it. We better make some big, bold moves. Because I just think that I don't want them to get lazy and think that what they have is good enough, when in your own division could be a team that could win it all.
It's funny, because there's a lot of irony with that, because when the Knicks assembled this core they have now with Mikal Bridges, with OG Anunoby, with Karl Anthony Towns, with beating the Celtics and loading up with those wings and a big that can stretch the floor, that was trying to emulate what the Celtics did in 23-24. You were trying to load up and try to compete with those guys. So for the Celtics to now do what the Knicks did and try to match that roster, there'd be some real irony in that. And I totally believe it. Like, you're looking at it. Again, they had no business losing to Philadelphia. Like, that is an epic collapse. And people try to still pass this season off as success. Like, come on. That's ridiculous.
Jaylen Brown.
It's absolutely ridiculous. Both things can be true, that you had excellent internal development. You saw guys take steps. But you blew a 3-1 lead against a team you had no business losing to. And then you see what the Knicks did, obviously, to Cleveland. What they did in the second round as well. Like, you look at all these teams, it's like they could have beaten anyone in the East. Maybe,
by
I
no
don't think they were beating
New York. By no means was this season a failure.
Yes.
I disagree.
Yeah, I would totally disagree with that. All right, so do you think that this is the type of organization, when they see the Knicks playing as well as they are, that they would respond in that way?
I think they respond when things go poorly for them. I think looking back at the 2023 season, when they lost to Miami, they fall down 0-3, come back, lose game 7 at home. That's when they prompted the Porzingis and the Holiday moves. You shake up that core, you trade away Marcus Smart. That's what happened then.
Yeah.
Like, now you have something. Not necessarily at that level, because that was the conference finals, and it was a lot. That was a really, really bad series, falling down 0-3 to an 8 seed. Miami was an 8 seed that year.
Yeah,
like, at least Philadelphia is talented, and maybe, you know, them being a play-in team isn't necessarily reflective of the talent they have, because Paul George was suspended, Joel Embiid was hurt for most of the year. maybe that was a little bit different. But the 8-seeded Miami Heat falling behind 0-3 and then losing a game 7 at home, that prompted those moves. And Wick Grosbeck told the story on these airwaves with the Greg Hill Show. He's like sitting there watching it. He's like, we're not running it back with this team again. Like something has to change. And maybe with the future in mind, like they wait another year to do that. But there are going to be some moves. Like just listen back to the Brad Stevens press conference. Like he was furious. Like there was anger in his voice.
Oh, like darn tootin', I am just
pissed. It's the same.
I'm pissed.
Two guys, same two guys though that were here in 2023 that are point, that blew it this year.
Yeah, I just, point. It's so, a 2-year fail.
I
do wonder like the what the ceiling was for the Celtics because Jason Tatum was not healthy, right? This guy was coming off a torn Achilles. Like no one was really sure if he was even going to play. No one was even sure if he.
They
looked
pretty
play.
Damn good at the end of the season, though.
They did, but he was still in the return to play protocol. And that's why he didn't play in a game 7.
Like, how about
now that he has a full offseason to ramp up and get back into real NBA shape or return to the player he was, that's the best addition they're going to make all offseason, a fully healthy Jason Tatum.
How about this? Can we get an adult in the room? Because that was the one great thing about having Al Horford. Like,
Drew Holiday.
And Drew Holiday, exactly. Yes. It was the veteran leadership that you needed. And when right now your veteran leader is challenging Stephen A. Smith to debates at MIT and running his mouth saying this was one of his favorite seasons, that's not the kind of person you want in that locker room to be setting the tone.
No, I agree. I think I was looking at a lot of like the postseason games this year and thinking like, what if they had an Al Horford? Like, what if they had a Drew Holiday? Because like, I think the impact of those guys get overlooked a little bit, and like especially with the 2024 team, because they're just blowing everyone out. But like Drew Holiday probably should have won Eastern Conference Finals MVP against the Pacers. Like he definitely should have won it. Like with the statistical averages, with the plays he made, the steal on Nembhard in Game 3, the offensive rebound in Game 4 that allowed them to ice the game. Al Horford was awesome in that Game 5 against Cleveland. He was their starting center for almost the entire run. Like if you have a guy like that, that just kind of like that calming presence that has that veteran know-how, I think it goes a long way. But at this point, shouldn't that be Tatum and Brown?
Jalen's going into
his 11th year. Jason's going into his 10th.
Who's the flag carrier for OKC?
SGA.
Okay, and he's a dog, right?
Yeah.
Okay, what about for San Antonio?
Well, that's Victor Wembanyama.
All right, who's so 22? Their best players are the ones that set the tone. Our best player, no, we got to bring in role players to set the tone.
You know what they are, though.
Come
now.
On.
But, Ted, we know what they are. Tatum is not that kind of leader. Tatum is great on the floor. Tatum is an excellent player. And as far as like his style of play, fantastic. Maybe he's a leader on the floor, but he's not an emotional leader. He's not someone like an Al Horford who will get in your face if you're not doing something right, or like a Drew Holiday who just is the veteran presence that does everything right off the court as well. And Jalen absolutely is not that guy. So isn't it weird? We happen to have two great players, but neither of them are the adult in the room.
Yeah, it sucks. It sucks. Let me ask you a question. The Knicks, 25 points in the first half off of fast breaks. You got the Oklahoma City and San Antonio that just attack, attack, attack. What do you watch when you watch these teams that are still playing stylistically? What should the Celtics learn from these teams?
Force turnovers. They've been trying to do this for years, like really since Joe took over. They've done a great job of taking care of the basketball, but they don't really capitalize on it because they don't force any turnovers. Like that's been one of the biggest things, and that was a priority that they had over the offseason coming into this year, was to try and force more turnovers, and they did it for like 2 weeks and then that was it. Like they still finished towards the bottom in turnovers this year. Like pace is kind of misleading because it really depends on the shots you're getting, so everyone looks at the pace number, but that's really kind of misleading. Like you can play fast in the half court too. Like if you're playing in the half court, like if you're moving around, you have a lot of motion in your offense. Like you can play fast and it won't register as a quick pace, you know, because it's about the shots you're taking. So I think pace is a little misleading. Like I didn't necessarily have a problem with the pace they played with last year. And I think one step they made last year that was tremendous was their offensive rebounding. Like they were one of the best offensive rebounding teams in the league. That's kind of why they were able to be so dominant in the regular season. But they didn't really force enough turnovers. Like if you can force more turnovers, I think this team would be in a much better spot.
All right, so Terp, first of all, we're in the Ketches Law Injury Attorneys studio. No fee unless you win. I want to play a clip for you because not only do I think this is unbelievably ill, like the worst thing you could possibly say as a coach, but also I don't understand what the F he means. And I know that you know all like about the statistics of basketball, and you know coaches speak because you interview them. Can you play the Kenny Atkinson clip from the other day? So this is after Game 3, And Kenny Atkinson was being, this is the coach of the Cavs, was being asked about what he thought of his team's play so far. And he says something so unbelievably tone deaf. But not only is it tone deaf, I don't know what the F he's talking about. Could you explain this clip to me?
Analytically, I think we've won the expect. I said 3 out of 3. We're 2 out of 3 in the expected. I don't know if you guys follow that. There's like an expected score, you know, and we won 2 out of 3. And I know you're looking confused, but there is really, you know, if you believe in process and all that, like, man, up. So, you know, take that layer. Us shooting way below expected, them shooting way over. You know, and I know when no one wants to hear that. I think you guys like hearing it. I know, you know, general public, no one wants to hear that. Everyone's outcome-based, and, you know, sure, I get that too.
Okay, let's put aside the fact that his team was down like 3 games to none, and then he says, analytically, we've won 3, you know, at least 2 out of the 3 games, and then after that is nonsense to me. What is he talking about? We've beat them in expected score, and what the hell is he even mentioning there?
First of all, he's absolutely right. No one wants to hear that when you're down 3-0 in the conference finals, especially the general public. I'm not sure he said like the you guys as the beat writers want to hear it. I don't even think they want to hear it. Like, they want results as well. Everyone wants you to see results. No one really cares about these. And the NBA teams, they have these internal metrics that have like the expected shot percentage and all this, and they probably add all those up, and it's like your expected points were greater than their expected points based off whatever shots you're kind of taking and different percentages, which there's a whole bunch of nonsense that goes into it.
Yeah.
But to be referencing that when you're down 3-0 is insane. And he lended himself to just so much easy jokes and stuff, because everyone's like, well, analytically, they didn't get swept. And analytically, like, there's a game 5 tomorrow or whatever. Like,
yeah.
It's just... That was a ridiculous comment.
Have you ever been caught in like a lie when you were a kid and you're standing in front of your parents and you just start rambling because you don't know what to say? It's like your brain goes into autopilot mode and words just come out of your mouth. That's what that sounded like.
Just take some damn accountability. You were up 22 in the fourth quarter of game 1. That's where the series was lost. I think everyone watching that game, everyone watching that series is like, okay, that if they win this game, there's a chance. But if they blow this one, you blow a 22-point lead in game 1, you could have swung home court. Like, that was it. Once you blew that series, it was over.
But they're bringing it back, Turp. It's shocking. Yeah. The reports today, they're bringing Atkinson back. They're going to bring Harden back on a new deal. Which you got to give this to the NBA, Rich. Like, it's an interesting offseason. Hockey's kind of boring now. Free agency happens, but there are no, like, big fish.
Yeah.
But we might have, like, Anthony Davis move. LeBron, your guy's going to move somewhere. But the Cavs and all this are going to run it back? What are they thinking?
I mean, I think that's more so, like, that Mitchell respects the hell out of Kenny Atkinson. I think that's it. James Harden the same way. Like, that core.
Who cares
really
what James
him.
Harden wants?
And I also,
like, that's the thing.
That's
is
true.
That, boy, James Harden is like Mr. Pick and Choose, and like, it's always somebody else's fault. But for some reason, these teams fall over for this guy. And one organization after the next, he just ruins. And it's like he leaves in his wake a bunch of failed teams.
He might be the answer to a guy like most talented, quote unquote, that have never won currently playing.
No. That guy, he gives up.
I'd say currently, yes.
You think he's the most talented to never win?
Currently not to win.
Like, Luka's more talented.
Well, Luka's still got some time. James Harden's running out of time.
Yeah, but James Harden gives up.
Yeah,
like he gives up at the end of games.
Well, Chris Paul just retired. Chris Paul was up there as well.
Oh yeah, Chris
Paul.
But like other Chris Paul would probably be the answer.
Hang on, Chris Paul isn't.
He absolutely. Yeah, he never won one. He absolutely deserved one too. He made one when he was with Phoenix and they played Milwaukee.
Chris Paul wasn't with LeBron when they won the one in the bubble.
No. Rondo.
He came close.
Oh, that's right. It was Rondo.
With the Rockets. Yeah. He came close with the Rockets.
Yeah, came close with the Rockets, came close with the Suns, but no, not he never won one.
Are the Knicks have a chance at all against the winner that comes out of the West?
I mean, with the way that they're shooting, if they continue to shoot lights out the way that they have, they absolutely have a shot. Like, when you're shooting that well, like, you have a chance to beat anybody. But I think the way that they've been shooting is way above their head. And now with this long layoff, it feels like they're due for a little bit of regression. Like, they're talented enough to make it a series, but I'm probably still taking any team out of the West.
It's interesting. The layoff, they had a long layoff after they beat the Sixers.
And it didn't matter then.
But they almost lost game 1.
Yeah.
Because they weren't ready to go.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, if they would have lost game 1, this might be a different, that would have might have been a different
series. I still would have picked them even if they had lost game 1, but obviously, it wouldn't have gone as poorly as it did. Like, the Cavs gave up at the end of game 3, completely gave up.
Did you see Donovan Mitchell like ripping into the team yesterday?
And they just didn't care.
And no one
cared.
They're
all just sitting there like nodding. Nobody cared.
I love Donovan Mitchell. And the one thing that I was talking to Ted about is that this has given us a better indication of who the dogs are. Like who the people, because we keep hearing these people like James Harden saying, you know, I still think we're the better team. When you have a guy like Donovan Mitchell come out and not only scream at your team, even though you know you've lost, just so you can save some face. And then afterwards you're like, yeah, we were ass. And that was unacceptable to our fans. That's, it's almost makes it so much easier to find the diamonds in the rough that you want on the court at the end of a game.
Atkinson should just watch Donovan Mitchell. Just watch how he handled that press conference. Yep. Be like, okay, that's how I'm going to do it. I'm not going to reference analytical numbers and all that. Like,
nope.
Just take some accountability.
That is the worst. That might be one of the worst things I've ever heard a coach say.
Horrible.
Like, you were down 3-0, and you said, well, you know, in reality, analytically, we really won all three. I mean, or at least 2 out of 3.
It is
fascinating give you that
how many coaches are going that way now.
Oh, it's the way it is.
Embiid's process kind of started this. It's all about the analytical process of getting to where you want to be. Happy time.
And he's been in the league for a while as an assistant coach.
Like, yeah.
He's previously been a head coach. And he's like almost 60 years old. Like, I get like the Missoulas, the J.J. Reddicks, like those younger coaches really lean into it. Like, if you listen to a J.J. Reddick press conference, oh, man, he's like expected shot, expected points, like all these numbers, he's just rattling them off. It's kind of fascinating.
I know you're looking confused.
But that one, yeah, don't get it.
I know I'm blowing your mind because I'm way on this intellectual level, way up here, and you guys are just these plebeians reading your, you know, your coloring books. You've got your ink pen from Mr. Mystery solving the battleship game, and I'm sitting up here blowing your mind with MIT-level stats, you dummies.
Maybe get him on the panel there at Harvard or MIT with Jalen. Yeah. Let them two guys talk about it.
Right. Just sounds like a guy who just hit himself in the head with a pan. Like, that was the dumbest thing you could possibly say. It was word salad. It was word salad. He was trying to sound smart, but he couldn't have sounded dumber.
And he was not fired. It's unbelievable. And he would say that and get your job.
I don't root for anyone to really get fired. I don't root for it. But I don't know how you can be an organization and hear that and go, this is a leader of men.
That's our guy.
Right? This is a guy.
I wonder if they look at like the year-by-year growth, though, because they make the second round in his first year. They make the conference finals this year. Maybe they're looking at that and like, okay, you know, like, and they've also won, like, what, they won 64 games the year before.
They're
going to
slingshot
this year.
They're
slingshotting as well. Actually, no, they have the most expensive roster in basketball, I believe.
No. Oh, yeah, I guess that makes sense. James
Harden.
And they're going to keep on doing it for James Harden then. All right, Terp, great stuff, my man.
All right,
Terp.
Guys.
Sorry about the funeral that you will be attending at Fenway Park over the next several days.
Let's get the bats going. It's nice out. They've been waiting for the nicer weather.
That's what it is.
So nice. It's like, I want to watch good baseball.
If Isaiah Kiner-Falefa hit that wall ball double that Connor Wong got thrown out today, that's a home run. That's a walk-off win. Biggest swing of the season. Well, now it's nicer weather.
All right. We'll be right back.
And I know you're looking confused.
93.7 WEEI. It is Rich Certainly, Ken Laird, 3-time Super Bowl champion Ted Johnson. You can give us a call at 617-779-7937. And we got a few more minutes left to get in your take grenade. Go to the Odyssey app, find WEEI, press that microphone, and record us a message. And we will play those here in about 30 minutes. So you got just a little bit left to still get those in. Once again, that is the Odyssey app. Press the microphone and bang. Leave us a message. OTAs start tomorrow. There's going to be the first time that Vrabel is going to speak to the media in a while. I don't anticipate there being any Diana Russini questions.
And Not one?
No. And you know what, to be quite honest, I don't really see a reason why there should be right
well,
now.
Well, we haven't had a follow-up since he left for the counseling on the third day of the draft, right? He spoke before the draft, then he didn't speak after, I don't think. Not after the third day.
I mean, he's made an appearance at a couple places, like at the season ticket deal, and he talked there. But
it'd feel a little bit like grandstanding him, I think. I think if somebody asked him a question.
Really? Not even one? Like, hey, you went away for the weekend. How's it impacted your team?
Following up on that three weeks later? Yeah, maybe. I just think it would be that person would kind of get the stink eye, and I don't know. I don't know who would have the chutzpah to ask that question.
I mean, there's times where it's a legitimate question. Like when he left for day three of the draft, you know, that's a good time to ask him a question.
And he called a special press conference before he left.
He did.
So it's not like he's against answering it. He'll probably be very guarded.
I just don't see until... Yeah, yes, it is.
How about just this question? Mike, do you foresee there being any more distractions from this thing, or do you think it's done and we're moving on?
I mean, that's a fair question, Stiz. The way that you phrased it, absolutely it is. I just think when he's really going to have to answer questions is after she talks. And I think we're kind of all on hold until either some massive shoe drops, which who knows what that is, or she says something. But right now, I don't see, other than what you just said right there, Stiz, there being any reason to bring that up. That's a great question. Now that you say it, I guess that would be one way you could phrase it. But outside of that, I don't see there being a big deal tomorrow. And it's not because I'm like, oh, my God, I can't believe someone's going to ask him. Listen, it's fair game if it affects the team. If it's something that affects the team and his ability to coach the team, sure, I think you should be able to ask about it. But I just don't anticipate it happening tomorrow. Am I the only one feeling that? That it's not, no one's really going to say anything?
I think he gets at least one question on it. And I think more than what he says, it's just, Jones and Keith mentioned this as well, I agree. It's just kind of how he answers it. He can't be defensive and cut people off. He's going to have to stand up there if asked and give a legitimate response.
Who asks it?
Mike Reese.
Yeah,
Tier
right.
One Reese.
Please, are you kidding me?
Going to come right in. First thing first.
You know what? I could see Tommy Curran asking it in a way that isn't a stinger. You know, like Mike, there's been a lot of distractions this offseason from outside the actual normal world of the NFL. Do you believe that there will be any further distractions that might hinder your ability to coach this year? Couldn't you see Tommy Curran asking a question like that? Because that doesn't seem like it's unfair. That just seems like a legitimate, straight-up football question.
That's a tough one. I don't know what he would say to that.
Yeah, I don't either. I
would say I don't see anything in the field. At least it's him commenting on it.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody else has pictures, but, we've seen how that went.
I mean, there's a couple people I've been calling to sign things.
I hear what you're saying, but I feel like it would feel inappropriate just how much time has elapsed from the last time he's talked and not much else has really happened. I just don't feel like it's the appropriate time to do that, but someone can phrase a question in a way in which I can change my mind. I just don't see that happening.
Yeah, I'm kind of like what Stiz said. I think that that's a fair question, but I also don't think it's necessary.
I agree. So if it's not necessary, I would be.
But it's fair. But you agree that that's fair. What he said, the way Stiz phrased it was fair. Is do you sense that there will be any more distractions that might hinder you from being able to coach this season?
Yeah,
that's
I
fair.
Hope not. I don't think so.
I think we all hope not.
I'm praying that there isn't. How do you answer that?
I don't know, but maybe as Ken was saying, the answer isn't in what he says; it's how he
the
answers.
Does he seem
the
calm?
Yeah.
One quick football question, Ted. Oh. Of all the rookies, because we've seen the rookies they had in a rookie OTA, but we have not seen them with the vets. Who needs to really show up that, like, they're in the mix and they're fighting to push somebody? Is it the tackle?
Backus.
Or is it Akis?
It's Akis. Let's go. Let's go, Gabe Akis. That is the edge rusher out of Illinois. I would love to see him stand out because, second rounder, was he, 23rd pick overall? That to me is a guy that can come in and start right away and be an impact right away. I think their edge rushers are okay.
Landry and Jones, yeah. Right? It's their first team.
Yep. Harold Landry and Jontae Jones, who they picked up in the offseason. Those are good players, but they're not standout players. Akis, they love this kid, former wrestler, and so I'd like to see him kind of show out a little bit. I'm very curious about the tight end, Eli Raridan.
He had no touchdowns at Notre Dame. Is that weird? For as good as he looks on film, he did not score a touchdown.
Yeah, that is weird. But I mean, did you see what he did between the 30s?
So, yeah, that's fine.
He looks like a poor man's a Gronk. That's a guy that I would love to see kind of break out. So those are a couple guys. And Caleb Lomu. I'm curious where they play him. They play him at left. They play him at right. What I like about the Lomu pick is you can never have enough good tackles. But even though Will Campbell is the starting left tackle, just drafting a left tackle is going to put pressure on Will Campbell, who had no pressure last year.
Yeah.
Was never challenged. They didn't even split reps with him and anybody else. He was given that left tackle job without really having to compete for it, which is you always want competition if you can. And I think Lomu just – being on the roster turns the heat up a little bit on Will Campbell.
Have you seen the new pictures come out of Drake? Looks jacked.
Really?
Yeah.
Enhanced games.
Yep.
I haven't seen that.
There's a couple pictures going around that he looks like he's gained some significant muscle.
Ooh. AI Photoshopped? This is legit. We think this is tarps off Drake looking good.
I mean, listen, he doesn't look like Schwarzenegger, but I mean, he's got some definition that wasn't there before. Good. and which I guess is good. You can never tell with quarterback.
Well,
I mean,
you never want him to be. You don't want him looking like Tebow. You don't want him look like a linebacker.
No. But his arms, like, I think that's where you saw it.
Well,
the most.
It shows that he's, you know, taking his offseason seriously.
Hell yeah,
must be that new weight room.
Why was it Tommy Curran who was like salivating? No, it was Greg Bedard who was salivating, saying people inside the organization are saying this is the year.
I can see it though. I can see it.
Sure,
the second year in Josh's system, I think it's. I can't wait.
Let's go.
Like. Let's go, baby.
Let's go. Hopefully, you know, you just want him to play like he's got the answers to the test, like Tom Brady said, where you're not thinking the game slows down. It's the year three miracle, baby. Let's see if it works. All right, 617-779-7937. We have a couple calls here we will get to, and we'll take yours right after this.